website infect it. And you could sort of have two extreme examples. One would be to just always infect anything you encounter. And then the other would be to have some sort of fitness optimization strategy where you adjust whether to infect or not based on some measure of the quality of that host. And so there are a number of factors that will impact this question of what is host quality. And then the other thing I will focus on a bit more in this time is how can host quality be accurately evaluated? So do infective stages have...
These two organisms are responsible for considerable economic loss. However, interactions or information regarding interactions between the beetle and the bacteria are surprisingly scant. What information we do have indicates that the bacterium is overwhelmingly dependent on the beetle for both vectoring and for overwintering. And I think that this sets up an excellent system to develop and use in answering some of the hypotheses I proposed earlier. So how to begin? So to begin detecting these interactions, you need a sensitive and hopefully non-lethal and non-invasive detection mechanism. So the obvious solution, of course, is to put the beetle on a plant and look for signs of pathogenesis. But this can be lengthy and even inaccurate. There are a few other processes that have been proposed, but they all involve the death of the beetle, which sort of precludes its use in further studies. So some studies have suggested that on its way to infecting the plant, the bacteria passes through the frass of the beetle. Now, if this is true, this would be an excellent way to identify vectors. And moreover, advances in molecular biology have allowed for incredibly sensitive procedures in the form of PCR. So my thought was to search the beetle frass for bacterial DNA in the hopes of identifying vectors. So my project had three goals. First, develop this protocol that I just mentioned, try to be able to search beetle frass for bacterial DNA. Second, test this protocol, make sure that positive frass samples are in fact correlating to some amount of pathogenesis in the plant. And third, apply the protocol, create a dose response curve, and see how long the DNA is being expressed in the frass of the beetle. So let me briefly discuss my methods. I isolated beetles for 24 hours without food or water, and then I fed them these sandwiches of squash cotyledon with a given amount of bacteria between. And I let the beetles feed, they normally eat it in about 6 hours or so, and I'd collect all frass 24 hours later and use this as my first data point. I'd continue maintaining the beetles in enclosures that I'd change daily, feed them further untreated cotyledon, and collect frass when necessary for further time points. As for PCR, I amplified a 404 base pair fragment of this gene, carbamoyl phosphate synthetase. I just made primers to a GenBank sequence that I found, and it turns out this reaction was incredibly sensitive. So when I did dilution series of bacterial cells, I found it sensitive to just a handful of cells in solution. However, upon the addition of frass to the solution, the reaction completely shut down. Who'd have thought there are a lot of inhibitors in beetle frass? So I spent some time developing an extraction technique. So kits are a little expensive for me. So I designed this protocol. So it's a simple digest in proteinase K, and I split it into two replicates. So the first is a quick dilution in buffer. So this yields by itself about 1,000 cell sensitivity. It can go a little lower than that, but not very consistently. So I take the other half of this and I embed it in agarose and wash it in buffer overnight. Now the theory here is that the DNA, being a long complex molecule, is retained within the gel matrix, but smaller inhibitors diffuse out of the solution. So in fact, I tend to lose a lot of DNA this way, but together these provide sensitivity very consistently down to about the 250 cell level. So for pathogenesis, I would take a small amount of frass water mix, put it on a cotyledon surface and stab through it several times to replicate beetle feeding and observe several weeks for symptoms. And I'll show you some results from this. So this is a sample data set. These are 9 beetles on the left. And in this first column, I'll show you whether the frass was positive for bacterial DNA. And on the right there, I'll show you whether the frass infected the plant. So 24 hours after inoculation, all the beetles' frass tested positive for DNA. And these beetles, those 5, their frass was capable of infecting plants. 48 hours later, those beetles were retaining bacterial DNA in the frass, and none of the frass was successful in infecting the plants. Now, the point I want to get across here is that while positive frass samples had variable success in causing plant infection, negative frass samples never caused plant infection. So this seemed to suggest that the protocol was successful. So with that in mind, I went on to creating dose response curves. So I used a strain from the ATCC, I'll just call it A, and at this point I hadn't refined my extraction procedure, so it was a minimum detection of about 1,000 cells. On the left here is the proportion of beetles with positive frass, and on the x-axis is the inoculation amount, ranging from about 1,000 to up to 1 billion bacteria. So after 24 hours, this is what I saw, a nice curve, expected nothing at the lowest level since I can't pick it up there, and then swiftly rising to almost 100% of the butyls showing the bacterial DNA. However, after 48 hours, this is what I saw. Rapid drop-off. You're only finding bacteria in the frass at these very high inoculation amounts, and only at decent levels in the highest, which was actually bacteria that I was scraping off of solid culture, so incalculable billions. And after 72 hours, it was zeros across the board. I couldn't find any more DNA in the frass. And I continued taking points for 4 weeks, but I could never find any more bacterial DNA. And this was not really indicative of a long-term vector, which the system is. So I thought maybe it could be the strain was inviable, or maybe my detection just wasn't low enough. So I changed both of those. I modified the extraction protocol to what I showed you earlier, and I got another strain from the ATCC. But this is what I found. Getting detection down at the low levels now, but once again, retention's only persisting to 48 hours and nothing at 72 or beyond. I thought at this point perhaps it could be replication number, maybe vectors are rare. So I focused on the highest inoculation amount, and I replicated it for 70 butyls, and I'll show you that. So once again, pretty much the same thing. Very good retention at 24 hours, dropping off rapidly. 72 hours, this is new, a few butyls are showing bacterial DNA in their frass, but by 96 hours, nothing is left. So what can I conclude from this? Well, at least I know that butyl frass with bacterial DNA is definitely pathogenic, and the dose of bacteria strongly influences the presence up to 48 and 72 hours, but by 96 hours, the bacteria is undetectable in the frass, indetectable. So as I alluded to, this doesn't mesh very well with previous studies, which have indicated the bacterial presence in the butyl for quite some time. So they found bacterial cell wall proteins persisting for weeks in the gut, and even the earliest studies found infective butyls after 72 hours. So how to reconcile this? I thought it might be possible that bacteria are present, but they're coming out in minute quantities. And I also alluded to butyl aggregations earlier in the season. So if an individual butyl is not a successful vector, you can imagine that aggregations of dozens or even hundreds of butyls on a single plant, all excreting tiny amounts of bacteria, would result in a significant inoculum for the plant. And once a single plant is infected, of course, butyls are retaining the bacteria for a couple days. They're very infective. It can spread rapidly through a field. Alternatively, there could be other vector pathways, if you will. It might not just be the frass that the bacteria is coming out of. So in any case, the protocol is functional, but the system at least doesn't seem good for testing any of the hypotheses I propose. 72 hours is a pretty small window for looking at symbioses. However, there's still a little bit more work to be done, I think. So I'm looking at comparing the gut contents to the frass. So you can see there in that picture that the gut is quite extensive. There's a lot of room for bacteria in there. I'm also looking at some multi-day inoculations, since I was only giving them kind of a pulse of bacteria. And I'm looking into a couple alternate vector pathways. So with that, I'd like to thank these folks, these institutions, and I'll take any questions.
We have lots of time for questions.
Mm-hmm.
And none of them pass that on to the plants.
Yeah.
Does that suggest that then and some of the other evidence? Does that suggest that there needs to be a minimum amount
threshold?
Of bacteria, threshold?
Yeah, perhaps. I was curious about that, and I've conducted a couple dose response for just injecting bacteria into the plants, and it does seem to be like small low levels of bacteria have variable success in creating plant infections. So yes.
That raises an interesting question. Why does it have to be a minimum dose for it? Or maybe it doesn't. Maybe it takes only a few bacteria. It takes longer for them to do their work if you didn't test that.
Yeah, perhaps. There's so some of the studies I've read suggest that the bacteria is very fragile outside of the butyl. It doesn't last very long. It especially has very little epiphytic survival or persistence in you know, the ground or the leaf surface. Yeah, so it probably has a very small window for infection once it's been deposited on the plant, which may have something to do with the amount of bacteria that's there. Yeah?
Have you tested this at all with field collected whole beetles? I mean, even though long-term approach, maybe you could at least
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I didn't have too much time to collect field samples this season. I did go out. I keep colonies, so I started those. And before I put the beetles in the colonies, I would screen their frass. The beetles I collected didn't have any wilt in their frass, but also the fields I collected, which were pumpkin, were not having any problems with bacterial wilt either. So it probably wasn't around. Yeah. And I don't have any other information though.
How is the bacteria spread between the vectors? Is it vertically transmitted? Or?
I don't think there is any evidence for vertical transmission. It's all about, so a plant gets infected, the beetle feeds on the plant, the bacteria enters the gut, and then it transfers through the frass to another plant.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the plant takes that bacteria through the roots from the frass?
Not through the roots. So the beetles are leaf feeders, and so they're skeletonizers. And so the frass is deposited. Actually, it stays on the leaf surface pretty much. Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Last year, in a talk that was presented at these meetings, and I didn't hear the talk, but I read the paper very carefully. And basically, the paper is highly flawed for a variety of reasons. I'll mention some of those things in the next slide.